gentlemen, and welcome to the Andy Finn Show. I'm Andy Finn, the Finn Man. And for the next hour, you're in Finland. Today is July 7th, 2008, and we just finished the 4th of July weekend. Patriotism was a big theme because we've got an election going on, and of course we have one candidate who's very patriotic and one candidate whose patriotism is suspect. At least, that's the narrative that Republicans and conservatives would like you to believe. But before we get to the heavy-duty stuff of politics, we always cover more general, more miscellaneous, sometimes lighter kinds of things. So that's where we will start. But on this day, July 7th, it was 3 years ago today that the London subway bombings happened. They went off in subways and on double-decker buses. And that was the Britain's biggest terror attack since the heyday of the IRA. And on this day, construction began on Boulder Dam, what's now called Hoover Dam. And can you guess the year? Can you imagine the year that Boulder Dam was begun? We got it? 1930. Let's recap real quickly what happened in the news. Of course, it was a shortened week last week with the 4th of July. But there were a few things in the news. Barack Obama did kind of a tour out west. He went to several red states where Democrats don't usually campaign. And he stressed patriotism. He stressed family values. And he answered a few questions. So it'll be interesting to see how all that plays out. We had a bizarre case last week in the Washington, D.C. area here where a Maryland police officer was run down by a 19-year-old, they call him a man, of course, in the paper they always say the man was, but he's a 19-year-old kid, ran down a police officer. It was a routine, well, I don't know if it was a routine stop. I think they stopped it because they suspected him of something more than traffic violations, but he decided to get away, and to do it, he had to run down the cop, killed the guy. The funeral was just last Saturday, I think. And then the suspect was strangled in his cell. Now, they had him under in solitary, or at least in a cell by himself, and they were watching him. He was on suicide watch, so they were checking on him every 15 minutes. And in between a couple of checks, he was strangled in his cell. So they haven't got to the bottom of it yet. The guards are circling the wagons, and nobody's willing to say what might have happened yet. But that was kind of the big local news in D.C. last week. And let's see. Jesse Helms died, the conservative, ultra-conservative senator from North Carolina, died at the age of 86. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on Jesse. I got nothing bad to say about the man the week of his death. But he was never one of my favorites. He was such a hardliner, I couldn't quite understand where he was coming from. So we'll leave it at that and avoid saying anything about the passing of Jesse Helms. And let's see. Oh, there's a State Department audit out about the passports of celebrities. You may remember going back about 6 months, there was a big flap. It was 8 months, actually, maybe last November or something. There was a big flap about the fact that Barack Obama's passport records had been culled, and someone in the State Department had actually looked at Hillary Rodham Clinton's passport records, and so the people initially thought there might be a conspiracy here to undermine Democrats or look for dirt or something. Of course, there isn't much dirt in passport records, but it's now, it came out that McCain's passport had been looked at, and a lot of this was done by contract workers, and so it ended up being much ado about nothing in that it was nothing particularly political about it. People were just snooping, curious about what was in the files of famous people. Of course, every computer access, there's a record of it, so they know what computer it was accessed from and what ID and password was used to get into it, and they caught the people that did it, and I think they were let go. The contractors were fired. But what this larger report that came out last week says, essentially, is that government workers repeatedly go into these files without authorization, and they go into the records, the passport files, of famous people. They might be entertainers, they might be athletics, or other high-profile people. And so it's just interesting, but somewhat understandable, that kind of thing can happen, but you got to have tighter controls on it. People have to understand that there's privacy issues, and you can't just because you have access doesn't mean you get to type in the name of your favorite movie star and check out their records, like get their home address or something. That is the kind of information we want to protect. So it's pretty widespread, and they're going to need to tighten the rules about it. And we will get to whether or not Obama is flip-flopping on Iraq and his plan to withdraw quickly when we get to the section on the campaign, but that's the claim that's been made this year. There's a renewed debate over what happens to the remaining 265 prisoners in Guantanamo Bay. Both McCain and Obama say they want to close it, and Bush says he wants to close it, and yet we're having trouble closing it. And there's a few reasons for that we're not going to go into this week. The president is looking to make a global climate deal with our G8 friends before he leaves office. I think there's essentially zero chance of that because the deal he wants to strike doesn't have mandatory caps. And it's got to have mandatory caps if it's going to go anywhere, it seems to me. And then, let's see. Well, it turns out that Michael Mullen, Admiral Mullen, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, has actually made the point last week in testimony that the Iraq war is hindering our efforts in Afghanistan. Mostly, you know, the president has claimed that wasn't so, but of course, it kind of had to be so. But they were claiming that it wasn't. And some things I didn't really get to last week include the last of the Supreme Court decisions that came out at the end of the term. The Supreme Court rejected the notion of the death penalty for a child rapist, and there are people up in arms over that. The Supreme Court slashed the damage award for the Exxon Valdez mishap. Exxon was originally fined $4.5 billion. It was reduced once or twice, and the Supreme Court has now reduced it to, I think, $500 million. But the big one is overturning the D.C. handgun ban. And that happened more than a week ago now, but it's big news because D.C. had the most comprehensive handgun ban of any city, and the justices said it's unconstitutional, that you can have some restrictions on handguns and handguns ownership, but you cannot ban people in your city from having them. So there'll be another whole set of lawsuits against other cities like Chicago that have a similar ban, but also against a variety of restrictions on handgun or gun ownership in general. Now, a couple things to say about this. One is that it's essentially the first time in more than 60 years, I think it was 1937 was the last time the Supreme Court addressed the Second Amendment. And of course, the Second Amendment has always sat there, much like a Mideast peace deal is the analogy I like to use. That is, both sides take away from it what they want, what they think they want the wording to mean. And it must have been a compromise among the founding fathers because it ended up reading something like this. I'm trying to recall it from memory. The need for a militia. I cannot remember the first clause of the Second Amendment. Can you believe that? I used to know it by heart. The second part is the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And that's the part that the Supreme Court affirmed in this decision. They basically said, it's an individual right, not just the right to have militias. And, of course, the original intent or notion was you can't, if you take the guns away from people, they can be subjugated or dominated. We don't want that. We want them to be able to have freedom, hold on to their freedoms. So going back 220 years, the best way to do that was to allow people to keep guns in their homes and things like that. Big city mayors face a little different problem, which is why a lot of them want to see heavy restrictions on handguns, perhaps banning of handguns altogether. And, of course, this is a hot-button issue for both sides in a way, but particularly for the right, the conservatives, the Republicans. And I guess without going through the whole litany of the arguments on either side, I'll just say that we know there have to be limits to this right. because when you say keep and bear arms, I mean, the United States has arms that go from sidearms to automatic rifles, automatic weapons, to armor-piercing bullets, to shoulder-fired Stinger missiles that can bring down planes and helicopters, to tanks, and finally fighter planes, and then nuclear weapons. So the right of the people to keep and bear arms, I think everyone agrees that we're not going to extend that to Stinger missiles, shoulder-mounted missiles and things like that. So already you accept some limit to this right. It's not absolute. So then the question is, where do you draw the line? And the Supreme Court is saying, you cannot ban people, keep people from keeping weapons. And I have to say that in general, I'm in agreement with that. I think that the unfortunate side effect is that we kill many more innocent people with weapons than we do manage to get criminals or stop criminal behavior. And the most interesting statistic out of all of this came out in an article that was in the Washington Post just in the last couple of days. And it points out that suicides are a particular problem when there are guns in the home. And it turns out that overturning this ban is going to mean more suicides in D.C. In fact, when the handgun ban went in place, there was research done, and suicides dropped about 25% in D.C. They used Virginia and Maryland as a control group, so we knew it wasn't just the some general trend in the area. And the logic is this. If you have a gun in the house and easy access to it and to bullets, if you're despondent enough to commit suicide, you have the means. And so some people manage to pull, when they're depressed, they get the gun out and they pull the trigger and they kill themselves. Whereas if they didn't have a gun in the house, they might feel suicidal, but rather than make a rash decision to kill themselves, they say, well, I don't really have a convenient way to do it. It's messy, you know, throwing yourself off a bridge, trying to die of carbon monoxide poisoning, whatever your favorite approach to suicide might be. Most people don't pursue it, and the urge passes, the dark mood passes, and then they don't end up doing it. And of the people who attempt suicide, a high percentage who don't succeed don't attempt it again. That is, it's a situational thing. They may be depressed, but not suicidal after that. So just an interesting note that one of the side effects of the Second Amendment is that more people die of suicide. And by the way, just so you're clear about this, we have more suicides in this country than we have murders. I believe we had about 32,000 suicides in 2007 in the United States and about 18,000 murders, with handguns, that is. In both cases, these are things done with handguns. So it's just an interesting way to put this stuff in perspective. And let's see, the decline in teen smoking has plateaued. It's not going down anymore. Oh, we know about the fact that the Justice Department allowed ideological issues to get in the way of hiring and that they broke laws. We'll see if they do anything with those folks. And I guess the only other thing I'd mention in this section is that David Addington, who is the chief of staff now for Vice President Cheney, and John Yoo testified in front of Congress. Again, this was not last week, but the week before. And boy, you talk about arrogant. They lectured Congress. They had failures of memory. They parsed words such as implement and the unitary theory. And just an amazing display of the arrogance of these two guys. Of course, they're two guys who the best thing you can say about them are their judgment was terribly skewed, and they served the country poorly, in part by approving torture, ultimately, pushing for torture, and then denying that's what they did. You writing legal opinions allowing the Bush administration to sanction torture, and Addington pushing for the advanced, what do we call them, the harsh interrogation techniques, the torture techniques, through the vice president's office. So all in all, a poor performance, but They'll fade from our from the news cycles here pretty soon, we hope. The Andy Finn Show is going to take a break at this point, and when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the things that are going on these days with right-wing talk show hosts.